Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. On this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this specific author spotlight, I am joined by author Charlotte Stein. Hi, Charlotte. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing great. Good to be here.
Usually this is where I read the bio for the author, but I forgot to put it in the doc. So we are not going to do that today, but I will drop it in our show notes on the website for you to read all about Charlotte. So apparently I am lacking today as well. Well, welcome to the podcast. And before we start talking about my big fat fake wedding, let's get to know you a little bit, okay? Okay, so why an author?
Why did I want to be an author? I've wanted to be an author for as long as I can remember. Right, I thought that I first started wanting to be an author when I was about 13, and I wrote my first longhand story novel thing in like a big green hardback sort of notebook thing. But my mum actually found a little story that I had written when I was about five.
Okay.
Yeah, just a kind of like once upon a time there was a fairy or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's always been in me, really, the desire to write stories, and then gradually evolved into, well, I want to get into this as a career, really.
So what drew you to romance?
Oh, well, when I originally wanted to be an author, when I started to think about what I wanted to write, I loved horror. Horror was my first love. It was the first genre that I got into. But what I realized that the more that I got into horror, the more books I read, the more horror I read, is that the horror that drew me in the most was ones with romance in them.
Okay.
The ones that had some kind of romance in them. And it was the same for sci-fi, it was the same for fantasy. Any genre I loved, I found myself really drawn to the romance in them and wishing for more romance in any book that I read. So that's when I sort of started to realize, I think it's romance. Romance is the thing for me, I think. And then I sort of gradually started reading more romance, getting into more romance. And this was all when I was sort of in my early 20s, something like that. So it wasn't romance from the beginning, but it kind of was in a way, I guess.
Like those undertones, like really drew you in.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you're reading, do you have a subgenre that, like, within the romance world that you typically go to, or do you still read a lot of horror?
I would say I definitely read more romance now than I ever do horror.
Yeah.
But there is like the resurgence of horror that's going on at the moment, with a lot of horror romance going on, which is very exciting. Very exciting. I love all that sort of thing. I think mostly I'm in romance now, and any subgenre of romance I'll read. I love, you know, contemporaries, I love rom-coms, I love romanticy, I love sci-fi romance, I love anything, I'll read it all.
So a lot of times in romance, like, we have like the big emotional arcs, the big like character arcs, but you have to balance it with the story itself. How do you personally find that balance, or do you find it difficult to create that balance?
I think for me personally, it's always been about character first. And what my characters want, their goals, their needs, that's what drives the plot for me. It's always the case where, like, all the other elements in the story are in service of character and what those characters would do and feel in any given moment. And I feel that any kind of plot just comes organically from that for me anyway, because I know my characters inside out. I'm deep in my characters. I'm a very deep POV writer. So that's always what it is for me. You know, if I'm writing and I feel like the plot is wrong, something's gone wrong, it's usually because I'm forcing my characters to do something that they wouldn't really do. Yeah.
Now, looking at your backlist, you have kind of a variety of things that you write. Is there one that you enjoy writing more, or do you kind of just, like, whatever is in, like, your mindset for the time, that's where the words flow?
I think I've always longed to write more paranormal romance more than anything.
Okay.
I think it's not always worked out for me as well, but then I love writing my rom-coms. I love writing contemporary romance, when I used to write sort of more steamy romance, I loved writing that too. Anything really in the romance genre, I absolutely adore writing. Really, I can get into anything.
Let me tell you, I'm looking through your list like as we're talking, and this How to Help a Hungry Werewolf, that cover is so freaking adorable.
I love it.
And there's like a tiny little raccoon.
Yeah, it's a talking raccoon in it. It's called Pod.
Oh, I'm gonna have to read that book.
Yeah, it was the cover of my dreams, getting that cover, because
really
I felt like the heroine, the way that she'd been drawn on the cover, was very kind of like old school Christopher Pike sort of covers that they used to do, and I've always dreamt of something like that. Yeah.
Well, and then the Desperate Demon one, that's really cute. Honestly, this cover and When Grumpy Met Sunshine, like they're just so fun and light. But like, so you also know like kind of what you're going into. But I love the color like schemes and all of that stuff. They're just so pretty.
I've been very, very lucky. These are my first sort of trad novels with St. Martin's Press, and they've just done an absolutely wonderful job with all the covers. I could not be happier with them. They're wonderful.
Well, in my Big Fat Fake Marriage, like it just really depicts the characters, because you know when you come across a cover one, a lot of times the illustrated covers don't have faces, like the people. And it's one of the things that we at the podcast have a lot of issues with, because like we found a cover recently, it's a newer cover, there's a lot of like detail in the facial like hair and like all the little things, and then there's no faces on the people, they're just a blank vector like circle thing, but it's like there's so much care in the facial hair, but no eyeballs, like why? But yours have eyeballs, so we appreciate that. But like but on this cover, like these two characters are drawn so well. Like he has his suspenders and he has his bow tie and all the things.
Yeah, it's Lenny Kaufman is the artist.
We love a Lenny.
She's just wonderful. She is just wonderful. I've just got the cover sketches for the next one in my rom-com series. And
oh, really?
The guy that she's drawn is the most handsome cover man I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, yeah. I do love a Lenny cover. I will say that. She has a knack for it.
She does a wonderful
But anyway. So how do you, as a writer, handle... Because a big part of writing right now, there's tropes, cliches, and all those things. How do you, as a writer, handle adding those tropes and cliches in, but also not making it too tropey and cliche?
I think
that question
I
makes sense.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, there's a big thing now about tropes first and then everything else second, but for me it's absolutely opposite. It's always like, just like I said, to do with plot and world building and everything, it's always character first. It's what the character, I cannot write a trope like, you know, sort of only one bed or fake dating and not have it ring true for the characters. They have to be, it has to feel like something that we're doing the most. Yeah. Always 100%. I can't do anything else. And for me also, it has to be a trope that I love and something that makes me like gleeful, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just can't get in. Like fake dating is 100% my favorite of all the sort of scenarios like that, I guess. And it makes it something I'm passionate to write, rather than something I'm trying to check a box, you know?
Right. So when you are writing, like your writing process, are you a planner or are you a pantser? Or are you kind of a blend in between?
I would say I'm primarily a pantser. I am. Okay. I'm definitely. Yeah. But I do kind of do a little bit of where I'll write for a bit, and then I'll sort of start the rest of the story will start to develop, and I'll sort of take notes and where I want to go with things, you know. But because I'm so character first, it's the characters that guide me into the different areas, you know. I can have sections plotted out, and then suddenly it'll become something different when I realize it needs to go in that different direction.
Yeah. Right. So like you start pantsing and then like kind of plan like as the story folds out.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll have like I'll have a scene in my head already that I want to get to, that I know that a really juicy scene that I want to happen, or I'll have the ending in mind and know that's what I want to get to.
So for your characters themselves, do you draw inspiration from your everyday life, or do you just kind of, they speak to you and you're like, this is something that I really want to write?
I think my biggest inspiration is usually films and TV characters, that more than anything else. Like, I know that a lot of writers, it's more about observing the world around them. For me, it's always been about other stories giving me ideas, inspiring me, actors that inspire me, things like that. Yeah, that's what it's always
Have
been for
you,
me.
like, when you're like watching a show or like watching a movie and you see like two characters, you're like, I wish I could, their story would be different, type of thing?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, it's essentially the fan fiction thing, but I would never, I don't write fan fiction and then translate it into a book. It is always just,
Like
it's that little
inspirational.
a little kernel of inspiration. And it's usually this person had a bad ending in something and I want them
And
to
you
have
want
a
to
happy
fix it.
ending. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I love that. I think that's great, because I mean, there are so many shows and movies out there that I've watched, like even as a kid, where I'm like, oh, I wish the ending was different. Like,
Yeah.
why can't somebody do that? Like, and I do love that so much.
Yeah, especially as such a romance lover as well, it's so rare to find in a show or a film a satisfying romance, something that really ends so satisfyingly, It's usually you'll have like some kind of relationship in there and it'll just kind of peter out or not end the way you want it to, and that's always what I'm thinking of, yeah.
And it's always that like show where it's like they have the two characters, the will they, won't they, and like you ship them and all that stuff. But then like when they finally get together, it's just so disappointing.
Yeah,
Like there
that
was a
too.
show when I was younger, it was called Moonlighting. It was with Bruce Willis when he was a
I know.
young buck still. And honestly, that show went downhill after they got together. Like, there just was
Yeah.
like the chemistry changed, and it's like all of a sudden, like the tension like wasn't the same. And it's like, well, you'd ruined your own show by putting them together. Like, that could have been the series finale where they finally like got together and we didn't have to see the chaos that unfolded afterwards.
I think also like the writers lose their nerve a bit when they get them together, then they just don't know what to do with them. And I think if they knew better, maybe it would be better, but well.
Well, it's like they almost changed their personalities. It's like the whole, like all of the tension is like, what's the point of the tension now? It's like that was the whole like basis of their relationship. Like the tension can still be there and it still be a healthy relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And and I think that's part of why as well that I love slow burns in books, and because I enjoy the burn, but it has to have that payoff as well.
It
That's what I'm all.
does. And let me tell you, there's a slow burn in this one. Slow burn. But we'll get to that in a minute. This is a newer question that I've been asking authors. Is there one piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
Goodness. So many pieces of advice. I guess don't give up hope would be the biggest one probably. There are so many, like, don't wait. Like, I wasted sort of 5 years too afraid to do anything, like to actually go through my agent and actually sub to publishers. I wasted 5 years too afraid to do it, and I would go back and say, don't be frightened, just go
Put
ahead.
yourself out there. Because the worst that happens is they can say no.
I know, yeah, it's exactly it. And the thing is, when I actually did, editors would just snapped me up. It was, I thought, what on earth was I hanging around for? That was just, it was, I, that was very foolish. Very foolish indeed.
Okay, so let's talk my big fat fake marriage. First off, I love this title. I think it is like perfect for the book. It released March 11th, 2025. Some of the tropes are fake relationship. So it's close proximity neighbors, but then there's a forced proximity aspect to it too, because they're stuck together in a cabin with one bed at a retreat. So you get both of those like proximities in one. And then it is a slow burn because It does not pop until 87%, friends. Pop, if you're not like aware of, is when it's the put out percentage. It's when on page action happens.
Is it really 87%? I thought it was sooner than
No, 87%. I mean,
that.
they kind of like do other things, but like the big
The
kaboom
big, yeah, that's it, that's it.
is 87%. And I looked it up to double check because I was like, I don't think it was that late, but oh, it was. So we have Connie, who actually is not Connie, but actually Hazel, which I thought that was an interesting story point, and Henry Samuel Beckett, who is this big, burly, lovable pie and cake baking adorableness of chaos and awkwardness.
That sums him up, yeah.
I just, he is such a nice guy. And if you listen to the podcast, like you, I love an asshole. Like there's just something about a character who's an asshole that it just draws me in. Like not in my real life at all, but honestly,
Oh,
like aside from the baking, he really reminded me of my husband a lot. Like, 'cause my husband is a really nice guy. He's a bigger guy. He's got the beard. Like he's a burly guy. He does not wear bow ties. He's a
no.
t-shirt and jeans kind of guy, but he just is a really nice guy. And it made me think of my husband a lot, but he, from the first time, like the book opens, they have this like awkward interaction in the elevator. Like they've known each other for a while because they live across the hall from each other, but it's just, they are both adorably awkward.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up most of my characters over the years. I do love to write an adorably awkward couple, or one of them at least has to be somewhat awkward. Yeah, I do love to write very much.
So Connie is a writer who's kind of struggling, but again, her name is not Connie, but she has told people her name is Connie because she, her parents are not the best. Like her mom kind of, she puts her down, like, and so Connie has a, she's a very insecure in some aspects, but very secure in other aspects, but she's kind of a contradiction in that way.
I love to write a character where they've got a kind of veneer of this is how I think I should be, or how think I think people, the front that I need to put up to sort of navigate, various relationships, my family relationships, societal relationships, friendships, and I love to sort of like write about that getting broken down, essentially, that underneath there's something else, and that starts to poke through in whatever way. And I love to write a couple who bring that out in each other, who discover the underneath beneath the veneer. Yeah, definitely.
Well, and that was one thing that you could really see with Beck and Hazel in the like process of this book is they're both fairly insecure. Like Beck is a man who like he lies to his coworkers about being married, but he's almost sheltered in a way. But when it comes to defending each other, like they are fiercely defending like one another to other people. And even like when Hazel like basically attacks Beck and is like, you are so much better than you think you are. Like she's like, why do you put yourself down? It's like, look in a mirror, friend. But at the same time, it's like they're so fiercely like strong in the way they defend each other, which I just thought was really great.
That was one of my favorite things to write, was the kind of thing where they're like, and I like to write this quite a bit as well, is the idea that you don't think much of yourself, but you think a lot of somebody else, and that you can do for someone else what you can't do for yourself, which is, sort of like you're not willing to fight for yourself, but as soon as somebody else is hurt, you're on it. And I loved writing that aspect. I really did.
And that was the thing, like this, like throughout the book, like that was one of those main themes. Like Connie was constantly like coming to the defense of Beck, like to his own detriment, like she was like, you need to see yourself as this. And by the end of the book, like they're both recognizing, like, I am this person. Like, it is not just the fact that, like, she sees me as this or he sees me as this. Like, these are traits that I do have. Like, Connie's best friend, Mabel, and her boyfriend, Alfie, who are book one of the series, but you don't have to read book one to read this one because I did not, but I will be going back because these characters are very intriguing. But even Mabel, she's like, you don't see yourself as what you really are. Like, you are strong. You are avoidance of these things because of this and this. And it's just everybody around her sees how strong she is. And I love the fierce friendships that they have.
Yeah, I've very much enjoyed writing the friendships, and in the first book, you know, that you can see that Connie is the one in the first book, Hazel is the one in the first book who, you know, sort of like is encouraging Mabel, and it was nice to have Mabel be there for her as she goes through this journey in this book, and just to kind of, you know, again, that same thing of sort of like trying to show somebody else that, you know, you are worth this, you are worth the things that you want, and try to encourage them. I liked writing them trying to encourage each other in a way that's a little bit like not trying to push, so they'll sort of like, you know, get all tense and not want to do it, but just sort of like give them little hints about how they could do this, and sort of gentle encouragement. It was really
It
fun
was
to
like
write.
those little nudges that really open their eyes. And like, there's a moment because so the beginning of the book is like Beck acknowledging the fact that he lied to his coworkers and that he's married. And then they're going on this writing retreat. Hey, Connie is actually supposed to go on the writer retreat, but then she's like freaking out and saying she doesn't want to go. But Beck is putting the writing retreat on. And so she's like, well, I'll go as your wife, but then I'm going to have to go as Hazel. And that's my real name, but nobody knew that. Which gets a little confusing, but it's okay. It works. And so they go, and they're both experiencing these things. And there's people from his work, and that Doug dude, he's such a douche.
Yeah, I love
Like,
writing. I do love writing a good
he's
douchebag.
the worst. But you needed him because, like, he basically puts Beck down at every moment, like, possible. And Connie is staunchly defending him, like, every time Doug opens his mouth, which is just so great. But he even is like, well, how could you be married to her? Like, which then makes her, like, think in her head, like, well, maybe this is, like, not, doesn't match. And the things that Beck has said makes her question like whether or not anything that like they're progressing is real. And there's a lot of self-doubt.
Oh yeah, I'm a big writer of self-doubt. My characters are often anxious and self-doubting, and I like to write kind of where, like, I think some people would call it sort of miscommunication, but to me it's those natural doubts that you have, especially when someone is so different to you. The character, I mean, both characters, at least on the surface, that seem are very, very different. And I think, you know, it's very easy to think, well, how would I ever be this person for them? You know, how would they ever be, you know, and to not see yourself as compatible in that way. I love to write a kind of a bit opposites attract, and to sort of play on that kind of anxiety about how different they are. That was really fun too.
Yeah, and it's not that these two don't communicate. It's just like those fears, like you never want to put into words those fears. So it's like the miscommunication that I just whacked myself with my sweater shirt. Good thing my glasses were there because that scared me a little bit. Nobody can see it, but it happened, friends.
It did happen.
Anyway, so that miscommunication, like it is there, but that's the thing. Like when you have those fears and doubts, it is hard to put them into words. And like you cannot tell me like not a human being in this world that does not have some sort of doubt and is afraid to voice it.
I mean, it's such a big thing in every aspect of life, not just in sort of a romantic relationship, but in friendships and things, is that you never know what somebody else is thinking, and it's so easy to imagine that they're thinking this when actually they're thinking that, and to slightly misinterpret their words. But like you say, it doesn't even have to be miscommunication in a way of like someone said something and you didn't understand it or something like that. It can simply be that the things that you haven't said, all the things that are going through your head that could be said, you know, that would be terrifying to say, you know? Yeah, for
Well, and the
sure.
way this story is playing out, like they're pretending to be this married couple in front of people and things that are happening. And so it's like they have these touches, these emotions, like in front of people, and it's like it feels real, but is it real? Like there's always that like second guessing. And that's one thing I like about a fake relationship book is the fact that like the feelings are there on both sides, because it wouldn't be the book like if there wasn't. And but it's like, what do they do with them? How do they react to them? Like when they do like transpire into like the private moments, like is it just caught up in the moment type of thing? And that's one thing that I really like. It's like trying to decipher like the fake from the real, and like when they
Yes.
decide it's the from the fake to the real.
Yeah, that is my number. That is the exact reason why I love fake dating so much. I love it because it's so fun and easy and just great to get that kind of tension between, okay, so you can have all the kind of kissing, you can have all the touching, you can have all the sexual tension, but then you can still have the characters plausibly think, is this even real? What is this? You know, you can really sort of play on that and hike the tension up to the sky and have them doing all kinds of things, but have them still not quite believe that this is a real thing, you know?
Well, because
And
it's like,
I saw that.
well, it started as this, like, is it we're just caught up in the moment type of thing? Because, like, and with Connie too, like, she does not have the best track record for dating, which is a lot of self-sabotage there. Like, but like she doesn't always react in the right way, like after things happen. And so I think that like she's so set in the self-sabotage that like she'll blurt and then be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said it like that. But then Beck does not react the way that she wants him to react, but he has had abysmal dating.
Yeah, I was pretty brutal on him.
Honestly, I think one of my favorite scenes out of the entire book was when he was talking about a date where he asked her to come back to his apartment to play Monopoly. And she did not think he meant Monopoly, but he did. And so they played Monopoly, and as anybody who's played Monopoly before knows that that is not a short game. And so they play Monopoly, and then she never called him again.
I actually had to reread the book just very recently, and that and usually my own books don't really make me laugh, you know. They don't, well, they kind of do, but not, you know. And that was the
You're like, I
one
was
bit
really
where
funny there.
I
But
laughed
that
at my own
Monopoly scene,
joke.
like I honestly had to stop reading because like I was laughing so hard. Because honestly, like, because he had already talked about how like he didn't go on a lot of second dates. He didn't have like a lot of good luck because he's not a very emotive person, which I mean a lot of people aren't. But when he that Monopoly story, I was just like, oh buddy, I'm so sorry.
Oh buddy. Yeah. Oh buddy is the exact right reaction.
It's like,
I just and I love I did love writing that scene.
I mean, I love a
Bless
good game of Monopoly, but
him.
not euphemism Monopoly either. But no, that was one of my favorite things. And she's like, and but Hazel's reaction is like, Monopoly, really? Like, that's what you asked her to come back for? And she's like, if somebody had asked me to come back for Monopoly, I totally would have thought they meant sex. So it's like there's just so like the thought process of these two characters is just so different.
Oh, yeah.
But Beck in himself, like as this like as you learn about his character, like you know, like his goal in life is to be married and have a family and all those things. So that's like where he's striving for. So he doesn't want the quick and easy. Like he wants to like nourish that like connection and all that stuff. So, and Connie, I think that was like a big hang up of hers is like she had this she knew that's what he wanted, and she's like, well, I'm not that. So what's the point? But she really is that.
I loved, I kind of wanted to get it to be where that was a big hang up of hers about, you know, that I'm not relationship material exactly. Not so much that she wasn't relationship material, but it's just that she has that idea of herself as not relationship material. And I definitely wanted that to be to play into things and to just have that just be her constant doubt, even though Beck is obviously feeling like, well, you kind of are. He sees, you know, he sees pretty quickly that she could be, if, you know, if she you want it to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And we get that, like, later in the book, there's a little, like, note that he has written, and I'm not going to give you any information about that one because that would be spoiling. And that was a really, like, profound moment for her. And I thought that, because that's one thing throughout the book too, is Beck is better with the written word than the spoken word. And so, like, there's another scene that I really liked where they're basically fighting, but they're sliding notes up underneath her door.
Yeah, originally that scene originally it was just they spoke to each other, they were just speaking, there was no notes. But then I realized pretty early on that I wanted Beck to be much better at communicating in writing, so I started sort of like weaving that in a little bit more, and that's how that scene came about, is that I wanted it to be notes, and I thought, well, how can they do it? I thought, you know what, they'll pass them under the door.
No, I thought that was great because like I mean, eventually they do start like talking through the door, but like basically the whole fight starts by like it's like such force, like sliding a paper under the door. Like you're angrily like throwing it. And like when you slide paper, like it can kind of go pretty fast. And it's like, how far across the hall does he have to walk to pick it back up? Like these are the things that run through my head as I was reading this book. I'm like, ooh, because like she knows he's pacing. It's like, how far does he have to pace to get the paper?
Yeah.
But these two, like, I mean, his love language is like baking and feeding and taking care. Like he just wants to care for her, and he wants her to see that he cares for her. And I mean, he like bakes her cakes and bakes her pies and leaves her little notes with them, and that like in itself is like he's much better with the written word, which it's interesting that that's the case, because a lot of times when you're writing stuff, you like your feelings don't always come across right. But I felt like you did a really great job, like in the little notes that like we were given, that like he was much more emotive in his writing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, partly I was thinking of like, you know, well, his job is to sort of communicate with people, to communicate with authors and all that kind of thing. So he'll naturally be better at that. But I also kind of felt like, I mean, this is something that happens in my own life too. I feel like in person, usually I'm not very talkative. I'm not very communicative. I find it hard to sort of like put myself forward. Whereas on the page, on social media and things like that, you know, when I'm writing on like Blue Sky or something like that, it comes to me very easily. It comes much more easily to really express what I want to say. And it's also the kind of feeling of like you can take the time to really consider what you're saying too. And you're not so worried about saying something wrong. And especially when he's starting to open up to Hazel, you know, it's kind of that feeling of I can say what I want to say now and get it right and get the things I want to say to her right, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, I thought that was such a great little piece to the story, because I mean, a big part of it is like he works at a publishing house and is an editor, and she is a writer who's struggling. And so it's like it all comes back to that written word aspect for both of them.
And plus, I just really like I can't remember what it's called now. I like books with letters. What's it? There's a word for it. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But I love books where they communicate with letters between each other. I absolutely adore that. So that was fun to do.
Yeah, and I thought it worked really well, because sometimes you'll come across a book where it just kind of is jarring in the way like that all of a sudden it's this letter. But the way that you wove the letters into the story worked well, I thought. Now, I will say, I was a little sad when I got to the end of the book that we had no Beck point of view. And that's a me thing. I was like, oh, man, I could have done with just one chapter to get into his head.
I'll have to do it for like a newsletter or something like that. But I mean, you're not the first person to ask about the male POV for a lot of my books. Lots of people have asked that, because I don't think I've ever written the male POV ever.
Really?
I always write single POV. Yeah, really. I always write single POV, and I always write it from a woman's perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just my thing. That's what I've always done. But I think I'll have to do something for When Grumpy Met Sunshine and My Big Fat Fake Marriage. I think I'll have to sort of.
I just really want him to like be in like cake baking mode, like what his thoughts are like while he's baking that cake. Oh, and thinking of his cake, there's this one line where he talked about, because they were talking about, oh, if she went to jail because she attacked Doug, like he could not Shawshank her out because his cakes are too light to hide a weapon in them. Like there's so many little things that, I mean, some people may not find them as funny as I did, but I laughed really hard because like I love Shawshank. It's one of my favorite movies. And I was
Mine
just
too.
thinking, oh man, you couldn't hide a weapon in a light cake.
Can't believe you remember all my favorite little things from the book.
Oh, it really, like, it's such a great story. It's light, but it's heavy at the same time. Like, there's emotion, but there's enough lightness in it that it balances it out. So it's just one of those books that's really going to stick with me. And honestly, like, I am kind of an awkward, insecure person. So, like, it really spoke to me because I see a lot of myself in Hazel.
Yeah, I think throughout my career, like I've often written heroines like that, and I think that's really what's kind of made my career is that people can relate usually to my heroines and that kind of doubt and things like that. I think that's really helped me over the years as an author. Yeah, for sure.
And that, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if an author writes like a heroine or a hero that you can relate to, like, you dive into it like so much more because, and you take so much more out of it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, for me, even if the character is, a serial killer or something, if they've got something about them that's relatable, if they've got something there, it is that much easier to sort of really go with them on whatever weird journey they're going on. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, because everybody's journey is different, and I think that's the key.
Yeah,
Well,
absolutely.
thank you so much for taking time out of your day to stop by and talk my big fat fake wedding. My big fat fake marriage. I keep wanting to call it my big fat fake wedding.
Everybody
Well,
gets
because I keep my big fat
fulfilled.
Greek wedding, like that,
Yeah.
like I kept like going that way, and I'm like, but they're not Greek, and it's not a movie, and so yeah.
My own mum does it. My own mum.
Well, at least I'm not alone. But thank you so
No.
much. This has been a delight. You need to check this book out. I 100% am behind all of these words that you put on the page.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.